Oh, not again, he moaned in Moraine.
Ooh,
said the golden rolls of flesh, the voice tumbling over the slopes of fat in a faltering series of tones.
Gracious, our bounty from the sea speaks.
The hairless dome of head turned further round to the man standing by its side.
Mr. Fast, isn't this wonderful?
The giant burbled. Fate is kind to us, prophet, the man said gruffly.
Fate favours the beloved. Yes, Mr. Fast. It sends our enemies away and brings us bounty. Bounty from the sea. Fate be praised.
The great pyramid of flesh shook as the arms went higher, trailing folds of paler flesh as the turret-like head went back, the mouth opening to expose a dark space where only a few small fangs glinted like steel. When the bubbling voice spoke again, it was in the language Horsa couldn't make out, but it was the same phrase repeated over and over again. The giant was quickly joined by the rest of the crowd, who shook their hands in the air and chanted hoarsely. Horsa closed his eyes, trying to wake from what he knew was not a dream. When he opened his eyes, the skinny humans were still chanting, but they were crowded around him again, blocking out his view of the golden brown monster. Their faces eager, their teeth bared, their hands stretched out like claws, the crowd of starving, chanting humans fell on him. They stripped off his shorts. He tried to struggle, but they held him down. In his exhaustion, he was probably no stronger than any one of them, and they had no difficulty pinning him. They rolled him over, pulled his hands behind him and tied him there. Then they tied his feet together and pulled his legs back until his feet were almost touching his hands and bound them to his wrists by a short length of rope. Naked, trussed like an animal ready for the slaughter, Horsa was dragged across the hot sand, past a weakly burning fire, then hauled upright and lowered over a short pole stuck into the beach so that it ran up between his back and his tied limbs. His knees sank into the sand, taking most of his weight. The fire burned in front of him, sending acrid wood smoke into his eyes, and the awful smell returned. It seemed to come from various pots and bowls spread around the fire. Other fires and collections of pans were littered across the beach. The huge pile of flesh the man named Mr. First had called Prophet was set down near the fire. Mr. First stood at the obese human side, staring at Horsa through deep-set eyes contained within a pale and grubby face. The golden giant on the litter clapped chubby hands together and said,
Stranger, gift of the sea, welcome. I am the great prophet Free Song.
The vast creature spoke a crude form of Moraine. Horsa opened his mouth to tell him his name, but Fui Song continued,
You have been sent to us in our time of testing, a mortal of human flesh on the tide of nothingness, a harvest thing plucked from the tasteless wash of life, a sweetmeat to share and be shared in our victory over the poisonous bile of disbelief. You are a sign from fate for which we give thanks.
Fui Song's huge arms lifted up. Rolls of shoulder fat wobbled on either side of the turret-like head, nearly covering the ears. Fui Song shouted out in a language Horsa didn't know, and the crowd echoed the phrase, chanting it several times. The fat, smothered arms were lowered again.
You are the salt of the sea, ocean gift.
Fui Song's syrupy voice changed back into Moraine once more.
You are a sign, a blessing from fate. You are the one to become many, the single to be shared. Yours will be the gaining gift, the blessed beauty of transubstantiation.
Horsa stared, horrified at the golden giant, unable to think of anything to say. What could you say to people like this? Horsa cleared his throat, still hoping to say something, but Fui Song went on.
Be told then, gift of the sea, that we are the eaters of ashes, the eaters of filth, the eaters of sand and tree and grass, the most basic, the most loved, the most real. We have laboured to prepare ourselves for our day of testing, and now that day is gloriously near.
The golden-skinned prophet's voice grew shrill. Folds of fat shook as Fui Song's arms opened out.
Behold us, then, as we await the time of our ascension from this mortal plane with empty bellies and voided barrels and hungry minds.
Fui Song's pudgy hands met in a slap, the fingers interweaved like huge, fattened maggots. If I can, croaked Horsa, But the giant was talking to the crowd of grubby people again, the voice bubbling out over the golden sands and the cooking fires and the dull, malnourished people. Hawser shook his head a little and looked out over the expanse of beach to the open-doored shuttle in the distance. The more he looked at the craft, the more certain he became it was a culture machine. It was nothing he could pin down, but he grew more certain with every moment spent looking at the machine. He guessed it was a 40- or 50-seater, just about big enough to take all the people he had seen on the island. It didn't look particularly new or fast, and it didn't look armed at all. But something about the whole way its simple, utilitarian form had been put together spoke of the culture. If the culture designed an animal-drawn cart or an automobile, they would still share something in common with the device at the far end of the beach, for all the gulf of time between the epochs each represented. It would have helped if the culture had used some sort of emblem or logo, but pointlessly unhelpful and unrealistic to the last, the culture refused to place its trust in symbols. It maintained that it was what it was, and had no need for such outward representation.